Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And my name is Will Bluewater. Hiju to Higu. This is, which means, by the way, I'm fine. How are you? Welcome, everybody. OCO, our guest this week is Roberta Charles. She's an elder and behavioral therapist with the Lower Elwha Klallam tribe and lives up in Port Angeles, Washington, near my son. And how are you tonight, Roberta? May we call you by first name?
I'm okay. I guess you don't know, but my husband passed away October 28th from over a year's battle with cancer. So I'm, so I'm doing all right, but at the same time, I'm still grieving.
Oh, I can imagine. I've been widowed twice. I probably know.
Well, this is after a marriage of 52 years.
Mm.
So
my gosh,
lots of memories.
we're sorry for your loss. And I know, you know, just because you're a mental health therapist doesn't mean, you know, well, maybe you do know. I don't know whether your professions help you. And grieving's really funny. I've gone through it a couple times, and I did some behavior modification work at Boys Town as a family living teacher, and it's hard. It's hard, and our prayers go out to you.
It is hard, and even though I believe in the next world and that the Creator is, that He's with the Creator, it's still hard because it's difficult to let somebody go after 52 years.
Mm.
And the memories that keep coming back, or, you know, just make me realize how much I miss him.
Well, I know it's probably a little bit easier for me because I see both of my wives, Joanne and Betty, on a regular basis. They bring encouragement. I've been scolded. I've been warned. Yeah, you know, I won't go into that, but I'm, you know, guilty as charged, you know. But for instance, you know, after well, I guess about 5 years after my first wife passed away, my son was 16 and was Job Corps, and I left graduate school and voc rehab to go trucking because there wasn't enough financial support. And so one morning I woke up, well, Joanne woke me up with a very stern look on her face. And so I called Betty and I said, "What's up?" And she said, "Well, did the company call you?" I said, "No." I said, "Joanne showed up." And she said, "Well, Joe was working in the heat at Job Corps and they think they may have had a heart attack and they want your permission to do some kind of test." And the test, as described, you know, could even threaten his life. And I said, "No." And turns out, you know, it wasn't, it might have even killed him. But all he had was atrial fibrillation. He's fine. He's settled down. He's 31 now and lives up near Seattle and works in as a journeyman carpenter. But,
good.
So, you know, watch your dreams.
Yeah.
He's certainly, he's close by. And,
yeah,
it's tough when you can't actually see him. And,
Otter.
Well, Mark,
when we get through with their birth reading, we can do a reading on the date when he passed over, because that'll give us some insight into what he's up to now and how it may relate back to her.
Absolutely. Roberta, you're gonna love this. Take it away, Mark.
Okay.
In the traditional Mayan calendar, your birthday was on the day, so this would also be your name, Tulamot. It's in the Manique cycle, and it's Manique's a cycle that has a couple things associated with it. Healing, also a deer, so you might have a above normal interest in deer animals. The Lamotte glyph is, in Mayan tradition, is associated with the planet Venus and all the things that go with it, and Quetzalcoatl and his connection to Venus, or some people call it the morning star, the dawn star, and different names, which is also what they called him, you know, the lord of the wind and water, and he was always associated with the dawn star, or the morning star, and and traditions all over the planet, all native traditions. So you might have an above-normal interest and connection to some of those stories too, because he was also a healer.
I do.
And there's another star system, though, other than the planet Venus, that comes up and with this particular glyph, the Lamotte, and that's the star system of Arcturus. The sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce, had several things to say about Arcturus. And in some of the Native American traditions, they also, like in Lakota, they pull the mourners or the stretcher stars and point to Arcturus. Edgar Casey also said that, if I'm not mistaken, he said that when any being or entity here in our galaxy wanted to learn about love, they would eventually make a trip to Arcturus, because he said the Arcturians were considered the masters of love in the our galaxy. Maybe a few other galaxies too. So that's your reading in the traditional Mayan calendar. I'm going to do another reading, and this is a reading in the Six Sun Zolcan calendar, which is a growth or an extension of the Mayan calendar. And it's going to have three components: a forward flow of time, the way we perceive time going forwards, a backward flow, which we don't see, not with our normal senses anyway. However, psychics and other people could tune into that particular time flow. That's probably what they're doing a lot of times. Or into the next flow, where the forwards and backwards come together into a balancing, or what some people call zero point. So we'll do the forward flow first. So this is a little bit more anchored to your birth, things that may be going on for a while, maybe what you came in with. And it's talking about unifying things, putting things together at all levels. People, especially people, but other things too, maybe. But having everything connected, a oneness or allness or a universal allness, is probably something that's been a very key part of yourself for a long time, maybe even mm-hmm. before you came in. You're born mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah.
It's coupled with... It's a what some people call a light or a mirror glyph. And so aspect of light, oneness, and universality of light would be a key, just a key way to say what you were when you're born and what was important to you. And as a partnering energies, these things are kind of other cycle type things that connect into the other harmonics that are higher but work with it. And the first one would be Ock, and he's the dog in the Mesoamerican tradition. He's the seeing eye dog that takes people when they leave this world. He's their seeing eye dog, guide dog through the spirit world, through the underworld. And he's also sometimes called the partner of Quetzalcoatl. He's associated there too as well. And he deals with death, transmutation, changing of things. So that's one aspect here. And then another layer up is community and cooperation within a community. So that's those types of things have probably always been significant. So I wouldn't be surprised if you had some things happening to you since you were a kid, and maybe you were good at helping people as a kid or when you're growing up or something, them dealing, coping with their own deaths and changes of people, or maybe you or other people around you, something this might be, you know, gone through what people call a near-death experience. So that could be another thing that could be indicated here, possibly, or maybe out of body or something like that. You know, a little bit maybe above normal ability to move over to the other side and
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm.
Probably had a lot of invisible friends when you were a little kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. On the backward flow, yours is an eight chelin or eight baths. This is an interesting one, because in the Mayan tradition, this is the day that starts their Mayan daykeeper ceremonies. So you might be interested in learning a little bit about Mayan and daykeepers and Zolcan calendars and stuff like that because of this one. And it's interesting because it's on the backward flow. So it's coming from our next world cycle into our world cycle, where the two worlds meet and overlap, which is where we're at right now. And it's all about So this may be these things that are showing up in your life more recently. You know, usually we say somewhere around 1997, 1998, maybe a little bit before, a little bit after that. And it's all about how to work with Maya, with the illusion of reality, supernatural powers, what we consider supernatural. Jesus didn't consider them supernatural necessarily, but we do. Creation itself, dreaming, intuition, using that, and also coming in here would be ancestors. So I wouldn't be surprised if you have some ancestors showing up in your visions, your dreams, or whatever, teaching you about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How does life work? How does creation actually really work? You know,
mm-hmm.
And how do you fit in with that and use and able to kind of raise things up? You know, add your little
mm-hmm.
drop to the ocean, so to speak. It's connected into sacred cycles of the sacredness of life and also an aspect of here of how things are formed, dimensionality, forming things within a dimension, creating things, you know. Again, this, how do you take light and frequencies and stuff and make them look like solid matter? That's a pretty neat trick.
Mm-hmm.
And how our senses are part of that. So where these two come together, interesting. So this is your zero point. This is where the two time flows, forward and backwards, come together, zero each other out, and balance. And guess what it is? It's going back to what we saw earlier, the Lamont glyph. The thing with Venus, Arcturus, and all that. And it's all about beauty, art, creating things, a grace in that creation would be a word that comes up. Tuning in, an attunement to things, reflecting and tuning in at the same time. The thing about kind of like a seed being planted here, and it's this awareness of flourishing, prosperity. Dreaming is coming up again here quite a bit. Not just dreams when you sleep, but your dream when you're awake, what people call intuition and stuff, different things like that. So watch for it not only while you're sleeping, but also while you're awake. Things could come
mm-hmm.
to you. And this whole thing about back when you're born in the universality or all or oneness, that's coming up here again a second time. So
mm-hmm.
that seems to be still a very significant thing. So it's not only significant, it's not only you came in with it, you're anchored to it pretty much almost forever.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll help you. And if you want, we can do one right now, and we can look at your husband when he passed across. And
mm-hmm.
maybe give you a little glimpse of what he's doing and how that may relate to what we just talked about.
Okay.
If you want. So you said it was
mm-hmm.
October?
October 28th.
28th, 2016?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's look and see what that says about him. Okay. Do you know if it was before or after sundown?
It was before sundown. It was 6:15 in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Okay, just checking. Okay, so let's see. I'm gonna go ahead and do both of them again. So I'll do the traditional Mayan one and that. So let me pull up the traditional Mayan one here because I got the other one already done. But let me do it first. Okay. Oh, I see why I'm supposed to do it. I wasn't going to do this, but I got a little hint that I needed to do it. So now I see why.
Okay.
In the traditional Mayan day count, that day, October 28th, 2016, was 7 Manik. Remember what I said about your 16 light thing being in the Manik healing cycle? Mm-hmm. Okay. Or, no, it was your Lamont was actually in that, two Lamont, yeah. So this one's connected into that. So that indicates the whole aspect of your birth and his passing over is connected onto a Manique hand glyph, which is means healing. It's also the thing with deer. So if you see some stuff showing up with deer, he might be connected into that too.
Mm.
And if you take your fingers and you put your thumb and your first finger together, so they form a circle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the fingers kind of follow around, just curl around. That's mm-hmm. what a Manique, that's what a Manique glyph looks like.
Okay.
You also just hand sign the Mayan number 9.
Hmm.
Okay. And actually, many Native American tribes, that would be their hand sign for 9, too, not just the Mayans, but some other
mm-hmm.
ones, too. Okay, so we'll go over the other one now. We'll look at the 6 suns. I'll can see what it says. Okay, about October 28th. On the forward flow, it's all about balancing wisdom, opening up new pathways, and the thing we saw about, remember on yours, the seed of awareness, flourishing, prosperity?
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up here. He's going to be part of that. And my guess is here, there's going to be an anchoring here to another star system, and it's going to be the Pleiades. And it's going to anchor, it's going to connect, and there's a bigger, this particular glyph and stuff is 6 ebb is in the Lamont cycle. Remember Lamont on yours? The Venus
mm-hmm.
glyph and Nocturnus? That's coming up here. And the next thing, next bigger click cycle above it, it's called a spherical oneness. There's that oneness thing again. Okay?
Hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it appears that I would look for things from him that have to deal with wisdom, especially stuff that would be coming in from the Pleiades and having to do with planting seeds of awareness, wisdom, and balancing things, and how to influence it in an artistic way.
Mm-hmm.
If you start getting a lot of stuff like that, he's probably some of his energy is probably behind that.
Okay.
Okay, we'll move over to the backward flow, and it's a 15 chakan. It's chakan is the serpent, and 15 means a number that relates to light. And this one's all about its instinct. Remember the thing about I said earlier about sacred power?
Mm-hmm.
That's showing up here.
Hmm.
So he could literally be one of these ancestors, maybe from the Pleiades. And it's the 15 is not just light, but radial light or spiraling light. Okay, in Lakota tradition, it would be skonskon. It would also connect into the spiraling light that the pyramids are built for. That's what they
mm-hmm.
work on. And the Russian, if you look at the Russian scientists, look up torsion's energy. And you'll learn a lot about how it connects with consciousness, builds up the photons, builds up all the matter and everything, all that stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of the things he comes through would be tied maybe to the ancestor stuff about this sacred power to light and how things form. All he's probably going to be helping you learn about that.
mm-hmm.
And a polarity of things. There's two of them, two of these lights that come through each other, one going one way, clockwise maybe, counterclockwise spinning, going through each other, becoming each other, and voila, matter. So if you see some stuff like that, that might be coming from him. Another one to look out for would be Jaguar. If you see something with the Jaguar, that might be teaching some of the same things, and it may be connected back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So now where these two come together, it's a thing about inquiring into everything, learning everything, fearlessness, reason. This dimensionality is coming up again with how things form in dimensionality. And the thing about the seed and the Pleiades thing and awareness, that's coming up again. And an aspect of prophecy coming up here. And it's probably more, if you know anything about the eagle and the condor prophecy.
Yes, I do.
The eagle and condor. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a little bit more with the condor side of the prophecy. So it's going to be a little bit more with the southern hemisphere, a little bit more with condor, a little bit more with tribal thinking, traditional tribal thinking and stuff like that. It's going to be connected more into that part of the prophecy. Not that the eagle part isn't important, but yours is going to be, your part seems to be, in terms of him, your husband seems to be connected more with the condor.
Okay.
And that's all kind of, so a lot of your colors coming up here, a majority of them have been yellow. So the color yellow might be a significant thing in all this for you. In the Mayan medicine wheel, the yellow is related to the south. So there's that south and condor thing again.
My friend Phil Lane would talks about the condor and the eagle and all of his work in the south, in Panama, and in South America.
Okay.
Well, Roberta, why don't you, if you will, tell us, you know, instead of us, you having somebody else on the couch, why don't you get on the couch for us and tell us about a little bit about your origins and, you know, whatever comes to mind. About
okay.
your people,
like,
about your path, and yeah, and what
I'm from the Tlingit tribe in Sitka, Alaska. I'm Kogwantan, which means eagle wolf clan, and my Tlingit name is Kaneska Kwa, which means something to do with the lady of the house, or the clan. And I was raised in Sitka. Jim Walton, my uncle, I was raised close by him, and at one point in my life, in 1962, I ended up in Denver, Colorado, in New Westminster with Loretta King and Lynn King. And my uncle Jim Walton came through from Canada, where he'd been talking to people on the reservations, and he said that we had to go to with him by caravan to Arizona to a great council fire that had been prophesied for 50,000 years. And so Lynn and Retta and Reggie Newkirk and myself and several other people jumped in the cars and we caravaned down to Tucson, Arizona. When we got to Tucson in the morning, we pulled into this restaurant and this man was standing at the door waving at me and telling me no, no, no. And I asked him, I said, "You're not open yet?" And he went, "No." He said, "You can't come in." And that's when I realized he was telling me that, no, I'm on the phone. Okay. And he told me, he said that we couldn't come in because we were the wrong color. And so we climbed back into the car and took off. And Uncle Jim said, well, let's not let that happen again. If we go to the next restaurant and they do that, we'll have a sit-in. And so we pulled into the next restaurant, and it turned out to be a mixed clientele. So we had breakfast there. And then we proceeded out to Palo Verde, the campground, where this council fire was going to be held. And it was that we were there for 4 days. And there were people from different tribes all over North America and South America and Central America and from Persia and from different races. But primarily what interested me were the Native American people, the shaman, the medicine men and women that were getting up and standing and talking about this message that they had heard. And they were saying that this message was indeed true and of from the Creator, that they had fasted and prayed for 4 days and four nights, and they had come to this conclusion that the message was one of truth. And the message was that there had to be this unity of mankind, and that the unity of mankind was central to the message, and the unity of all religions, that they were all from the same Creator, and the unity of the world, of the all of the creatures and the air and the water. And the people were speaking through translators because most of them didn't speak English. They spoke their own native tongue. And what was interesting to me was that they were saying that when they went back home, they wouldn't be telling people about this message because they didn't want to interfere with the process of each person finding truth for themselves, that this was a truth that we had to find out individually. And I think it was the third day I was standing at our campfire, and I was looking into the eyes of this man who turned out to be a deeply spiritual person, and he was called the Hand of the Cause, and this was the cause of God. And I looked at him and I said, where do I sign my card, which was a card to become a member of this body of people who understood this message. And so I became a member, and it was a wonderful thing because I had been praying about it. And I forgot to tell you that when I was in New Westminster, my cousin had thrown me a book called Thief in the Night, and I read it, and I understood what it was saying, but I didn't have any spiritual movement, so I couldn't really accept everything that was being said. If you understand what I'm saying, it had to be a spiritual movement within me to accept this. And it happened as I was listening to the people and as I was gazing into the eyes of this man. And I've been a follower of this ever since. My uncle, when we left there, we went to Colorado Springs, and we met my cousin, Jack, and we told him about the message that we heard, and we asked him if we could say a prayer, and I was saying this prayer for him to be open to the message. And my heart was singing. I could feel this wonderful movement, spiritual movement within me. And he accepted the message. And then we went to New Westminster. And Uncle Jim suggested that we go on a traveling trip into Canada and share this message with the different people on reservations. So Loretta and Lynn and myself and Reggie, we all got in the cars and went on this teaching. And we went to different reservations telling people about this message. And I recall this one older couple who'd been married 75 years, and they were Cree, and they didn't speak English, but they had their children who spoke English. And we shared with them that night the message of unity of all peoples and of all races and of all the religions, and how we each had to find this truth for ourselves. And the next morning, my uncle asked me to go out to the car and get a picture, and I got this car picture, and I brought it in, and this couple pointed at it, and they said, "Oh my gosh, that's the man who's been standing at our bed all night, watching over us." And they also accepted the message because of it. And afterwards, my uncle said he wasn't surprised, because that happened all the time. Whenever he was traveling from one reservation to another, people were rapidly accepting this message. And he said that wasn't what surprised him. It was that these two people had been married for 75 years and had shared the same dream. And he was astonished about that. And he said that that was the kind of marriage he wanted. And I agreed with him. I thought, you know, that's right. That's what we want. And the following several months later, I met my husband-to-be, and we were married in Seattle. And after about 3 years, we got married. And then we went down a rather turbulent several years, and I ended up with my uncle coming to me and telling me that we had to go to Siberia for a council, council fire, the spiritual unity of tribes gathering. And he talked about how he had heard this message of Black Elks, and he'd been so inspired as to have these spiritual unity of tribes gathering. And so he had begun having these council fires, one of which was in Niobe, and I attended that. And then up in Fairbanks and in South Dakota. And then we had gone on to Siberia, where we were at this resort. And the people, the ministers of culture, had been hosting us. And we had different people, tribes, coming to hear the message. And that's what happened. I remember being in the sweat lodge with the pipe carrier, Ben Rod, who was Lakota, and he led us in prayer. And it was interesting because none of us spoke the same language. We were all from different tribes. They were from the north and northern Siberia and central Siberia and eastern and western. Hey, Mom? Yeah, I'm still on the phone.
I want to tell you one thing.
I'm on the phone.
If you would have told me that earlier, you'd have breathed a lot less.
Okay. So that was another part of my journey, and from there I met the professor, the director of the University of Yakutsk, and he invited me to come back to Siberia and teach at the university, and I took him up on that, and I brought my son, Douglas, who was 7 years old then, to Siberia, and we stayed there for 2 years. I was trying to recruit people from the villages to get them to become natural helpers to talk to the people in the village about chemical dependency. And I wanted to go into the schools, and they were resisting this effort because they didn't think the children would understand the message. And it was interesting because every day I would come home for lunch and my son would tell me about this book he was reading called Freeing Someone You Love from Chemical Dependency. And finally one day it hit me. I said, son, I said, would you be interested in going out to the villages with me and talk to the children in the school about what you're learning in this book? And he said, well, sure, Mom. So I went back to the university and told them about my idea, and they agreed that it would be a good thing. And so they made arrangements for me to go into the school with him doing the talking about chemical dependency. So we went out to the first village and to the first school, and my son threw it with a translator to the children in the school at the third grade level. And he shared with them everything he knew about freeing someone you love from chemical dependency. And at the end of the talk, he asked them if they had any questions, and they were asking him questions. And then we went out to the car, and he was sitting there telling me about how angry he was. He said, I feel like there's thunder and lightning going off in my stomach. I've never been so angry in my life. And I said, what's the matter, son? And he said, I was here to tell people about something that could save their lives, and they're asking me about what is a little native boy like you doing in Siberia. He said, that's not what I wanted them to ask me about, and I'm not going back into those classrooms again if that's what they're going to be asking me about. And I sat there and thought about it because we had were scheduled to go into several different schools. And I thought about it, and I said, son, what did the book tell you about what happened in there? And he looked at me, and he put his head down, and he thought about it for a few minutes, and he suddenly put his head up, and he said, oh, Mom, I know. It's the first stage of denial. And I said, you know, you're right. And I said, so let's go back into the classrooms, and before you... when you introduce yourself, tell them that you're going to give this talk. And at the end of the talk, you will answer questions about what you just talked about. And if there's time, you'll answer other questions. And so that's what happened. And he was very successful, and he was happy. And he ended up... being on children's TV in Yakutsk, and the children had banquets for him and gave performances in their native regalia. It was wonderful. And so we stayed there for a couple years, and At the end of our time, we were at the traditional healers. Because I had been talking about spiritual transformation, we had been called back to the traditional healers of Siberia, where I was made an honorary member of the traditional healers of Siberia. There were hundreds of shamans present when that happened, and I was quite pleased about that. Well, the director invited us to come out to talk to him before we left, and we went out there. And he asked me if I would please come back to the University of Yakutsk in the fall and teach a class on spiritual transformation to the shaman and men and women who were traditional healers. And he said the reason why he wanted me to come and teach that was because the shaman had learned all the physical skills about healing, but had lost the spiritual part of healing, so the holistic healing wasn't taking place. And so I agreed to that, and I signed a contract, and then they turned to my son, and they said, and we would like him to come back as well and also teach, because we've heard what he's done in the schools. And so he said he would, and he signed it. Well, we came back home here in Port Angeles at the Laura Ella, where my husband had been for 2 years, and we told him what was expected of us, and he said, no. He said, I can't give you permission to go. He said, it's been too lonely here without you, and so we didn't get to go back. Anyway, I've been working here at the LOA since then, and talking to people and having interfaith devotions twice a month since then. And it's been quite a journey. And in the meanwhile, I've gone to several of the Spiritual Unity of Tribes gathering events that my uncle had. And then he passed away. He was flown out of Turskiv, where he, which is a northern city in Yakutsk, where he was with Tanya Martinova, and they had developed opened a clinic for fetal alcohol syndrome. And he was talking to them about community building and about how the same message that of unity of tribes and unity of religions and the unity of the air and the water and the animals and the fishes and how we're all interconnected. And then he had a stroke, and they had to fly him out of Yakutsk. And Susan Christensen, the one who hosted the gathering in South Dakota this past summer for the Spiritual Unity of Tribes gathering honoring the grandmothers, she arranged for him to get flown out. And they saved his life at that time. And then he turned out to be unable to go back to Yakutsk. And he ended up passing away in Juneau. But since then, the Spiritual Unity of Tribes gathering has continued. And different people around the world have hosted different Spiritual Unity of Tribes gathering, and it's been a wonderful experience for me, and this message that I've been hearing about and telling you about is of the Baha'i faith, and I've been a Baha'i since 1962, And I've been teaching about this message from the Creator about how we have to be unified, and how all of the religions, including the messengers from North America, are all united in their essential truths, that they're all teaching the same message from the Creator of unity, and that's what Black Elk and Crazy Horse taught people about, and about the seventh generation, and about how people would all be coming together like at Standing Rock right now. And at Standing Rock, there are different people from different tribes and different nations around the world standing up, coming together to protect our sacred water. And of course, I'm standing up with Standing Rock. And we've had different people here from Elwha go there, and from my tribe in Alaska, the Sea Alaska, sent down a canoe this summer. And Nea Bay and other tribes around here also sent canoes. And there's been different ways of supporting that effort happening here. If you have any questions, go ahead and ask me. Hello?
Yep. We're still here. At least I am.
Okay.
I'm not her otter. But, so, yeah, it sounds like interesting, because you pulled in and had your son on your trip with you over there, too, as well, to Siberia, and got him involved.
He graduated last year from the University of Washington with a degree in biology, and he wants to go back and get his teaching degree.
So
he's gone with me several times to Israel on pilgrimage.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. When we left Siberia this last time, we flew from Siberia to Moscow, and from Moscow to Israel, and then from Israel to North America and back to Elwha. And then we were in Israel a year ago in March.
Oh. So in all your travels and your communications and connections with all these, you know, different people, and your kind of message of everybody getting together and unity and such, what have these people kind of been telling you? You know, have they been kind of getting a feeling or any messages or something coming or something happening to,
well, they've,
you
been
know,
talking about the prophecies that their own tribes have had about this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I have a friend named Willie Waloya, who wrote the book Warriors of the Rainbow, and that talks about all of the different Native American, Quetzalcoatl and Handsome Lake and Wovoka and Black Elk and all of the different messengers that have come here to North America from the Creator, and how they all talk about essentially the same message.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was having problems with my mic. Roberta, I was going to ask you, did you know Brinkerhoff? She was a good friend of Willie's.
Of Willie Waloya's?
Yes.
What was her name? What was her name?
I think he may have just dropped signal or something there.
Her name was Zula Brinkerhoff. She was from Utah. She was David Monongi's adopted daughter.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Just curious, because she wrote a book that kind of featured a chapter about Willie.
Oh, okay. Willie was in OMAC this last summer, and he was telling me about how there were Baha'is there and how he was concerned because he was moving back to Alaska. And he was wondering if they could get deepened on the community building aspect of the faith. But, yeah, community building is an important feature of the faith, and how to build a community of strength, of creating an ever advancing civilization.
I'm sorry.
Did you have any more questions?
Yeah, Mark, take it. I'm having some problems.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it. I think that that aspect of unity, I think, is showing up in a lot of different ways. That's why I was interested in what you'd heard in your travels and maybe just experienced yourself. Has there been any more, you know, in the recent years here, some more on that, maybe that just came into you yourself, some kind of, you know, thing Spirit gave you or gave you some insight into that you might share with us?
Well, you said something about the number 9. And that's a really important number in the Baha'i faith.
Remember when I had you put your thumb and your finger together, right?
Yeah. And the houses of worship all have 9 entrances. And that's for different people coming from different parts of the world to worship. And it doesn't matter what religion you are, but you can come into any of the doors. And there's most recent house of worship opened up in Chile, Santiago, Chile, just this past summer. So it's the fastest growing religion in the world. There's a temple near New Delhi, which is beautiful. It's shaped in the opening of the lotus blossom, which is highly symbolic in India. It's a sacred opening of the lotus blossom. And it's white and is made of marble, and it has reflection pools all around it and the 9 doors. And there's over 1 million people a year that go into that temple and to worship.
Well, that the 9 comes up, too, in both the Mayan and the Hopi. The Hopi and their ceremonies have several times where that number 9 comes up. They have, when they get through, I'm trying to remember if it's Wuyichim or Soal. I'm trying to remember. I think it's Wuyichim, where they have a part where the kiva goes dark, and they kind of go nuts in there, and they run up the ladder. And then when they get up at the top, they have a washing ceremony, and they have 9 bowls or 9, you know, things there. They also have, if I remember right, earlier in that, as the Pleiades is coming into a certain position, and then before it moves down, I think on the horizon or something, they have like, I think, 9 songs that they have to complete before the stars. I think it's when they get from the opening of the kiva until it goes down the horizon or something like that. I may be getting it mixed up, but something like that. But they also have, in their mythology, 9 world cycles. So they have right. seven of them, which are kind of set apart. And then they have two more. One is for Creator, and the other one's for his, like, nephew or second command or whatever. And so they say that we have those nine worlds to move through. Now, two of them are, you know,
Thomas
kind of set
Benyaka.
Aside.
Thomas Benyaka came through and talked about the rocks at Oribe.
Mm-hmm.
And he described them in detail. And he told us that he had been sent by the medicine men from the Hopi to come and explain to the world about the rocks at Oribe and what they prophesied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be like
really...
the prophecy rock and then the maybe some of the tablets, like Bear Clan
mm-hmm.
and Fire Clan tablets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was quite fascinating to listen to.
Well, that nine comes up again, though, too, because on a replica of the Fire Clan tablet, which is probably the most more notable or notorious of the tablets because it's the one with the missing corner.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was visiting one of the Hopi elders on Third Mesa, he showed me this Fire Clan tablet, and it was complete. And it had more than just the missing corner. It had some other stuff on it, too. And one of the other things that was on it was a nine-pointed star.
Oh, yeah. And the nine-pointed star is what is the symbol of the Baha'i Faith.
Now, in this nine-pointed star, it had a bunch of stuff with it, though. One, just a nine-pointed star. It had what looked to be like a pyramid in it, inside of the star.
Mm-hmm.
And the pyramid and the capstone of the pyramid were not separated, but they were kind of sitting there together like you'd expect, but they weren't, you know, it wasn't directly connected. And there was like this envelope or thing of light coming out for where the two would connect.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a cloud or a pillow or a semicircle or oval or something like that. But and it had some other stuff on it too. But it was interesting to me because I brought it up because of that number nine again. And
it was interesting that Kevin Locke also talked about the Morning Star and how he became a Baha'i when he recognized the Morning Star as part of the symbol of the faith.
Yeah, that comes up. I mean, you go all the way Canada, all over the United States, Central America, South America, the Polynesian Islands. You know, they talked about the great healer and all the stories. You know, they say they talked him out and equated him and connected him to the Morning Star, Dawn Star, every time. Some of them, that was his name. When they, you know, asked what his name was, and he basically said, well, you know, that names aren't really important, but if you want one, pick one for me. And some of them would be insistent and say, well, no, we want to know what you were called when you were born. And some of them would just pick a name, and half the time, you know, they'd pick out Morning Star or Dawn Star or whatever the equivalent was in, you know, their language. So it's very interesting that shows up, like, all over the planet.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you could go, why? Why would that be? I mean, what was going on? It's interesting because Venus, I mean, our solar system has a lot of anomalies. There's, you know, all our planets are doing something different. But Venus is rotating the opposite direction as most of the moons and the planets in our solar system rotate. It's going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Venus is, you know, according to some things, Venus may be a newcomer. And if you go back in history a long time ago, you know, it seems like when they listed out the planets, you know, it's like Venus wasn't there. You know,
yeah.
Wait, well, why wasn't it there? You know, and so there's a lot of thought that Venus may have came into the solar system from somewhere else, or you know, I think Velikovsky thought it popped out of Jupiter, but I don't know that he did that based upon what story said. But if something if Venus had swung around Jupiter, it looked like it was popping out. So I don't know if it was just moving around it, or if it actually came out of Jupiter, which is what Velikovsky was sort of proposing. But
and there are 9 planets, aren't there?
So I think it may have just swung around. But it's interesting that there's all this on Earth. You're looking in a lot of different ways. There's all this stuff about Venus.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so,
love is the most powerful force in the universe.
Yeah.
And Venus is symbolic of love.
Yeah. So. Was there any other things that come to mind, you know, that you've learned on your travels and stuff here, or about, you know, what and things you observed that might help listeners and everybody, you know, because part of our show on Blue Otters that we really promote pretty heavily is, you know, for everybody to form their own connection with Creator and
right.
have their own,
yeah.
you know, get their
That's
own message and get the story straight from their mouth to Creator and do that. And but I'm wondering if, you know, if you have some
That's
ideas about that and the unity thing.
That's one of the spiritual principles of the faith is independent investigation of truth. And that we also have the equality of men and women a universal need for a universal language so we can all speak to one another, that grandparents can speak to their grandchildren. We have a strong spiritual connection to the Creator, that we don't have any clergy because we are considered to be spiritually mature enough now to not have to have clergy.
Amen.
And that's why we have to have an independent investigation of truth.
I think Thomas Jefferson would have been a Baha'i. I think it was he that question everything, including the existence of God.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Roberta, we appreciate you coming on. I apologize. I've been having some mic problems here, but we really appreciate you sharing your wisdom.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Mark. And we'll see everybody next week.
All right. Good night. Take care, everybody.
Okay. Good night. Bye.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aklavan Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
The hot sun on the dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around. Out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner.